everyone. Welcome to Animal Voices. My name's Alyssa. Today is Friday, June 5th, 2015. Today is our Empty the Tanks show. Empty the Tanks. It's also World Oceans Day on Monday, June 8th. So we dedicate the show to the oceans and in particular to cetaceans who suffer in captivity all around the world. And also in Vancouver. So let's see. Let's introduce. There's a lot of people here. It's a full house. I'm not the only person here. I am joined in studio today by Jackie.
Hello.
And Amir.
Hey.
On the controls. Rafa is also joining us all the way from Switzerland.
Hi.
Thank you so much for coming to hang out with us today. And also we have Annalisa Sorg from No Whales in Captivity, a local group that's been dedicated to ending the captivity of cetaceans in this region for over 20 years. Thanks for joining us today, Annalisa.
Thank you for having me.
And we'll have a proper interview in the second half of the show with you. Before that, we're going to feature Rachel Carberry. It was in her imagination that Empty the Tanks was born. It's a worldwide event happening tomorrow, June 6th, and we're really excited about that. It's happening at the Vancouver Aquarium and aquariums and sea parks and marine parks all over the world. So we're going to talk a lot about that today, and we're really excited. This year is the third annual Empty the Tanks event. It's Saturday, June 6th, 11 a.m. at the Vancouver Aquarium. I think we're all going, aren't we?
I'll be there.
Yep.
Yeah, sure.
Awesome. Favorite memories from last year? How did last year's event go for you, Jackie?
I just remember there were so many people. I was excited to see that many people come out. It shows that people really care about this, and that's good. I think that we have the strength to, you know, achieve our goals.
Yeah, it was really exciting. What were the numbers last year, Annalisa?
Definitely between 300 and 350 people, so it was packed, and we expect many more this year, so it's quite exciting.
And I think I read somewhere, too, that David Isbister will be bringing some cookies. He is a local vegan chef, and he has amazing, amazing food. So that's something to entice some people. Come on out and enjoy some cookies.
Yeah. He cooks and makes amazing home products under the name Plant Base. I think it's one word, and you can check that out on Facebook. And I think he's planning on bringing 300 cookies. So that's pretty cool. Yay, David. Thank you so much. Jackie, do you have some news items before we get to Rachel Carberry?
Yeah, so I saw this this recent news story shared a lot on social media. It's about a sow named Mercy who was found loose near the Perimeter Highway in Winnipeg, and that was last Friday. She was named Mercy by local activists who hoped to save her from slaughter and instead buy her and move her to a nearby animal sanctuary in Ontario. Unfortunately, Mercy was slaughtered before she could be saved. So between Friday and Tuesday, Charlotte Sigerson and other local animal activists had raised about $2,400 in pledges in a GoFundMe campaign to purchase Mercy. So others had started a petition up to nearly 5,000 signatures on Wednesday afternoon, calling for Manitoba Port Council to allow the pig to be purchased by animal advocates. Instead, Mercy was sent out first thing Monday morning for processing in the U.S., so she was slaughtered before they even were given the chance to save her. And so the Port Council reps are saying that it was because the council was not involved with what happened to the pig and that it was the pig's owner who decided her fate. The pig had apparently been examined by a veterinarian with the province's chief veterinarian office at the site where the pig had been found. And after the pig's owner was identified, they transported her directly back to them. So Sigurdsson, however, is saying that Port Council employees lied to advocates, saying the pig was being looked after on a local farm to recover from her ordeal, but she was actually already in the queue for slaughter. And several animal advocates also said that they had been contacted at their workplaces by Port Council employees who had made false accusations against them and tried to get them in trouble. In other news, south of the border, with No New Animal Lab campaign, two activists locked themselves on top of a large excavator at the University of Washington, which is protesting the construction of a new animal research lab. That was on Monday that took place. Amanda Shempkes, a law student at Seattle University and member of No New Animal Lab campaign, says activist Oliver McCrocken had been on lockdown at the construction site for over 6 hours and had effectively stopped work for that day. Another activist was there with McCrocken in a support role. So Oliver McCrocken, who was locked down, and Jenny Matheson, who was the support person, have been released from custody earlier this week after spending 12 hours on the excavator and some time in jail. Both were charged with criminal sabotage, which is a Class B felony in Washington. So they will need continued support. So please do check out No New Animal Lab for info on how to donate and support them.
Thanks, Jesse. Yeah. Captivity is cruel. Captivity is cruel.
Yeah, right. Haven't you seen Blackfish?
Captivity is cruel. Captivity is cruel. Captivity is cruel. Captivity is cruel.
Forget
Six Flags Discovery Kingdom and Shed Aquarium. Just play dumb. Marine mammals don't belong in terror. They don't live as long as their wild cousins. Captivity stresses them out. It might not rhyme, but it's all the same. Captivity is cool. Captivity is cool.
Captivity is cool. Now we have joining with us on the phone Rachel Carberry. She is the founder of Empty the Tanks Worldwide, and about 3 years ago, and it's amazing what it's become today, the success of the worldwide event. So we're really excited to have Rachel with us. She's a Sea Shepherd Conservation Society Cove Guardian, and a 2013 visit to Taiji in Japan changed her life. Thanks so much for joining us today, Rachel.
Thank you so much for having me on today.
Well, it's definitely our pleasure. So I want to know what happened in 2013 that you saw that inspired you to create Empty the Tanks.
So, you know, when people go to Taiji as a Cove Guardian, or whether you're, you know, part of Dolphin Project and you're there with Rickleberry, you know, people, anybody that's there, whether, you know, however you're experiencing what happens in Taiji, it changes your life. So I think that it's that sort of a something everybody could say happened for them while they're there. But for me, something happened for me personally just watching the trainers from the facilities that are within Taiji work so closely with the dolphin killers, and seeing them ride on these small boats together. They talk and they laugh, and you just really see the absolute link between these two things. And I felt that I was there in Taiji, and I'm giving this voice to these dolphins that are losing their lives in those waters. And I knew going home, I had to find a way to kind of continue that fight, but not just for them, but for the captives. You know, the ones that are taken for captivity that are languishing in these sea pens in Taiji, it's horrible, and it's a heartbreaking sight. And I wanted to fight for them, but I wanted to also fight for all the captives around the world, not just because of the fact that every time somebody goes to a marine park in the United States, they're helping support the dolphin slaughter in Taiji, but also because whether there wasn't that link or not, these animals don't belong in these tiny pools. So that's kind of how it started. Is I felt like I had to do more. I had to give back more to these animals than what I had been previously to going to Taiji.
And what's the vision for Empty the Tanks? Like, how did it come to be? And tell us, for people who don't know, tell us what it is.
Yeah. Well, so when I was in Taiji the first time, and I was talking with my friends that I was there with, and I was saying how I really wanted to go home, and I was gonna protest the captivity industry, and I was going to find a way to have these events all on the same day. And everybody kind of looked at me like I was probably a little out of my mind, because nobody did that. This wasn't something that people, you know, did worldwide, sort of standing together. So thankfully, you know, I love social media for the way it brings activists together. I was able to get in contact with people, I guess it was sort of friends of friends. Somebody would tell me, oh, this person's into helping animals in Spain, you should contact them, and slowly word spread. And that's kind of how it started, and how it grew to the way it is now, is just being able to so easily communicate and reach out to other activists all over the world with social media, and that's amazing. So the events are sort of a combination of protests directly in front of facilities that house captive dolphins and whales, but then some of our events are also just public awareness events that will take place in a public park or a public square, somewhere where there's going to be a lot of interaction with the public, and we can talk to them before they start planning their summer vacations to places, whether it's, you know, here in Seattle, we're going to try to talk to people about maybe don't go up to Vancouver Aquarium and here's why, and maybe don't go down to San Diego and visit SeaWorld and here's why. And it just allows us to really engage with the public at the public awareness events. But the protests are all about educating the public as well.
Yeah. And can you tell me how many cities you're up to now this year?
So there's been a lot of last-minute additions. We are at 65 locations throughout 20 countries. There's a slight chance it might go up to 66 or 67 locations, depending on some of the emails I have in my inbox right now. So we're bigger than we've been in the past years. I mean, my very first year doing this, we had 21 locations in 12 countries, which was still amazing at the time. I was floored that I could get 21 hosts from around the world sort of rallying together, and now we have got 65 confirmed locations, which is just phenomenal to all basically be speaking out together against the captivity industry on one single day.
And I noticed that that Empty the Tanks isn't like a nonprofit organization. Is there a reason? Are you leading up to that, or have you specifically chosen to work just as an individual?
Yeah, that's actually a great question. I get that question a lot from people. I think sometimes when people send me emails, they think that it's Empty the Tanks is a nonprofit with all these resources, and they don't realize it's just me doing this sort of after my 40-hour work week. So I have chosen not to go the nonprofit route at this point. For one, it's very costly to set up a nonprofit, and Empty the Tanks is not, there's not money in order to do something like that. It costs a lot of money to set things up. But then also, you know, it's a lot of extra work, sort of having to run a more of a business, and with sort of everything that goes along with that, that I just don't think I would want to take on, that kind of stuff. But my biggest reason is that, to me, there are so many great organizations already in place that are fighting this captivity industry sort of as nonprofits. You know, you have Free Morgan Foundation and Orca Network and Rickleberry's, you know, Dolphin Project, where they do a lot of releasing and working with the captive dolphins to rehabilitate and release. And they do so much great work, and they've been established. They've been around for a while, and I don't want to just sort of jump into that game and start competing for donations. I want to work with them and support them. And as I remain just a campaign that sort of one person organizes, I'm able to very easily work with so many people from around the world that are involved in nonprofits. We have animal rights groups from all over the world that organize these events. Some of the people that organize are Sea Shepherd volunteers. Some of them are Dolphin Project volunteers. So it's really great because there's not that nonprofit status. Therefore, everybody is working together a lot easier.
Yeah, I love it. That's inspiring, and thanks for sharing that, the detail. I'm wondering what keeps you motivated. I know it, you know, it's been 3 years, and you said you have a full-time job doing something else. What kind of successes around the world are you celebrating that keep you going?
Yes, that's a great question as well. I'm pretty motivated by animal rights issues, sort of in general. I work for a nonprofit at a farm, basically like a farm sanctuary. So my sort of daily life is very involved with just doing everything I can to help the animal world. So it comes very naturally to me to continue to fight for them. I tell people all the time they could release all the cetaceans in captivity into sea pens and we could end this horrific, outdated practice of keeping these animals in captivity. And I would just move on to the next cause because there's always an animal that we can continue fighting for. It's, but, you know, with the successes of Empty the Tanks, at these events, I love hearing the stories from people telling me that they got a family to turn their car around, or they got a couple who had a season pass through SeaWorld rip up their entire season pass in front of them and join their protest across the street. And I think that every day, even if you just reach one person, you've made a difference. And to me, that is enough of a success. I don't need it to be leaps and bounds every year. I think we're reaching so many people every time we're out there. And the fact that you're getting one more family to think twice about what they're spending their money on, and that person is then, they're going to have a conversation with someone in their family about, well, we were going to go, you know, to Miami Sea Aquarium, but we changed our mind and this is why. And then that's one more person and it just sort of ripples out. And to me, that's enough of a success to keep me motivated. But I would say more of my motivation comes from the stories of knowing that these animals are still suffering. When I think of Tillicum, you know, living in a more isolated life in Orlando, and I think of, you know, Lolita, how she's been by herself in Miami for years, and the baby beluga at Georgia Aquarium that they just announced had died. I feel like those stories are what keeps me motivated to keep going every year, even when I'm exhausted at the end of the day.
Yeah, for sure. And here in Vancouver, it's Hannah, the Pacific white-sided dolphin who recently passed away. That's who we're mourning, and that's who a lot of us are there, you know, in honor of. Do you have any tips for people who attend Empty the Tanks event, like in terms of the messaging? I know it can be very emotion-fueled, and, you know, anger comes up because, you know, this is such an injustice, and it's so heartbreaking that these animals are in there, and like that the ignorance around it can be somewhat infuriating. How do we like get across to people and have those successes that you talked about?
Yeah, you know, one of the things that I have asked all of the hosts from around the world, no matter where they're at, is that we don't want this. The Empty the Tanks events are not about standing, you know, across from a marine park and shaming the people in line and chanting and yelling and being angry, because that doesn't make you an approachable activist. That just makes you one of those extreme crazy people, and they want to avoid you, and they think you're just kind of out of your mind, and they'll go into the park anyway. So for me, when I do these events, when I stand out in front of whether it's a marine park or a Ringling Brothers circus event and I'm protesting, I get people to come up and talk to me because you have to be approachable. You have to remember that at one point you were also ignorant and naive to the situations. And these people who are standing in line, most of them are probably not just heartless people who don't care. It's that they genuinely don't understand the issue. You have to try to reach out to them in a positive and productive way, not in a violent and aggressive, emotional way. And to me, that's just a much better way of going about it, because we want people to be inspired by why we're standing there. We don't want them to be offended. I try to tell people not to have the big, gory, blood-filled Taiji photos at these events because these are family parks. And, you know, that mom with her five-year-old isn't going to come over and talk to you and you have a photo like that in your hand. You want people to talk to you about this issue.
Yeah, it makes sense, especially, yeah, with all the kids around. And I think it's important that people are very intentional, like going in, like, what's the point of me being here and what message do I want to get across? Because it's easy to just get emotional and kind of lose your ground. So, yeah, thank you.
Everybody has to learn this stuff at some point. But, I mean, we didn't all, I mean, it's most of the activists I talk to, they didn't know how wrong captivity was, you know, sort of coming out of the womb. Like, they had to learn these things, and we've all made that sort of unintentional choices that weren't very compassionate at some point in our life. So we just need to sort of remember that when we're trying to talk to these other people, that they're just at that place. They're not at our level yet. Yeah. We help get them to our level.
Yeah. Now, what are the goals of Empty the Tank? Some say that, oh, you know, you can't release them into the wild and that's a silly idea. And, oh, these silly activists, you know, they don't really know. Can you talk about what the goal is and what you want for the cetaceans?
Yeah, absolutely. That's actually a misconception all the time when I see the sort of anti-empty the tanks people, they're always saying how, oh, these activists want to release all these animals into the ocean. And that is 100% not accurate. Like, I make sure that's on the website so people understand that's not what Empty the Tanks is about. This is about ending the breeding programs within these facilities. I think that Georgia Aquarium, I mean, they just had another baby die. When are you going to figure it out? Stop trying to recreate the ocean in your little swimming pool and with all of these forced reproduction situations happening. So for me, I think a huge success would be if we were to kind of get the breeding programs to stop and we could start working on phasing out the animals as sort of the ones that are there are going to now be the only ones there until they're gone and move them into sea sanctuaries. I think that to me, that's the ultimate goal. I don't think there's probably very many candidates of captive cetaceans that are really going to be successful in the wild. I think that there's a lot of hope for maybe like Lolita because we know her family. And this is you know, the most studied orcas in the world as far as I know, I think. So I think it's important for people to realize there's a few animals that can be released into the wild, but most of them are not good candidates for that. And if we could end breeding programs and get these animals in the sea sanctuary where people could still come out and look at them, there's no tricks. There's none of this sort of circus act on the water happening with, you know, it's put them into a little bit of a more natural environment and let them live out their days in that type of a setting rather than being forced to do these tricks for this sort of unnatural dead food, stuffed with medicine, and then they just live in these tanks that are absolutely nowhere close to a replication of their ocean.
Rachel, do you know of sea pens in the world? Just quickly, I'm just curious because I don't know of any, really. Is there, like, sea sanctuaries?
I know that they do have the site. They know where they would put Lolita if they could get Lolita back home where she was taken from. I do know that they have at least the sea pen sanctuary site ready. But they know where they would put her. I'm pretty sure there are some other areas in the world that they do have some set up because they do releases of dolphins from captivity. I think that's some of the work that Rick O'Berry has done. Mm-hmm. So I'm pretty sure there are some, but I'm kind of like you. I'm not 100% sure where they're located, but I'm sure there are some already in place.
Yeah. Now, just finally, we only have a couple minutes, but can you tell us how animal advocates can support you and your work directly?
Yeah, absolutely. So you can always go to emptythetanks.org From there, we actually have a cute little shop button that you can click. If you go to the t-shirt, we've got on ecojoya.com, which is a fantastic site, and they support lots of really great organizations. You could buy, we have Empty the Tank shirts. We've got some new ones out this year with our new logo, and they're really cute, nice designs that aren't just, you know, sometimes you get these shirts and you only really wear them for the event and that's it. We tried to create stuff that people could wear all year round, not just at the events. So you can get shirts, and if you buy a shirt, the portion of the purchase goes directly to Orca Network and Free Morgan Foundation, because Empty the Tanks is not a nonprofit. We have basically I've divvied out any money that comes in from the shirt sales goes out to the other organizations that I would prefer to support. And then when I have some stickers that I sell, and I haven't sort of publicly told everyone the point of the stickers was I sell these stickers because I'm hoping that I'll be able to purchase some billboards or bus ads with the money from that. So again, none of the Empty the Tanks money ever goes into my pocket. Anything that comes in gets donated to another organization, or I'm hoping I'll be able to do some cool stuff with billboards or bus ads in the very near future. So people can do that. You can follow us on Facebook. It's Empty the Tanks Worldwide. We're on Instagram. It's at Empty the Tanks Worldwide on Instagram as well. And just follow, share the messages, and donate to people like Orca Network or Free Morgan Foundation, who are, you know, they're doing great work right now. And I would love for people to support them, and you can still get our Empty the Tanks message out, but donate to the organizations that are already in place.
Awesome. Yeah, well, great. I hope people keep in touch with you. You're doing such great work and can't wait for tomorrow. I guess you'll be down in Seattle and we'll be up here in Vancouver.
Yeah, so I was hoping to come to Vancouver, but my husband didn't get his passport taken care of. So we're going to stay in Seattle, but I will hopefully make it up to Vancouver for another event. I know they have sporadic events up there. So hopefully I'll make it up and see you guys up there sometime.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks again for joining us, Rachel Carberry. Best wishes. I hope tomorrow is excellent. I know that, you know, hundreds of people worldwide are involved in this, and it's just going to keep growing. And again, yeah, thanks for your time.
Thank you so much for your support and helping get the word out.
Speaking with Annalisa Sorg of No Whales in Captivity. Been active around the Vancouver region since 1992. And yeah, just so excited to talk to you again here on Animal Voices. I know we've spoken with you a few times over the years. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. I mean, I've been around since Animal Voices started. And actually, I was one of the people who went to the interview with Co-op and sold them the idea. So I'm always happy to be here.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Yeah. We've been on the air, what, like almost 15 years, 14.
Probably a bit more.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Awesome. So the Vancouver Aquarium has been in the news quite a bit recently over the last few weeks. Actually, this whole last year, just it seems like story after story after story. There's so much going on. Most recently, I guess it's been that, a few weeks ago, Hannah, the Pacific white-sided dolphin, passed away there. And I saw on your site that you were posing the question that it might have been suicide.
Well, we know that Hannah was very sick.
Mm-hmm.
But what really brought that question to mind was the fact that when she was lying on the table, they had operated on her and she was awake. It was after the operation. And the aquarium vet told the media that Hannah looked around the room and looked everyone in the eye and then took a deep breath and she was dead.
Mm.
And what that made me remember was the story of Rick O'Berry, famous Rick O'Berry of The Star of the Cove, a documentary that everyone should see about the Japanese dolphin slaughter and captivity. And so Rick O'Berry was the trainer of the Flipper dolphin, which that series way back in the 70s, I believe there was 5 or 6 dolphins that played Flipper. But his favorite dolphin was called Kathy. And when Flipper, the series, stopped, these dolphins were shipped to aquariums. Rick O'Berry went to see Kathy, who was stuck in a tank all by herself. And when Kathy saw Rick, she did the same thing. She looked at Rick in the eye, took a deep breath, and sank to the bottom of the tank. And so Rick jumped in the tank and grabbed Kathy and pulled her up to the surface, but she wouldn't take another breath. And so Rick tells the story of how dolphins are able to do that, because apparently dolphins are conscious breathers. So even when they're asleep, they have to, let's say, keep an eye open for breathing, because they have to think about it. It's a strange concept, but that's how they are. So when we heard the story about Hannah looking at everyone in the operating room in the eye and then just taking her last breath, we thought, oh my God, this sounds like Kathy, like a suicide.
Wow.
Yeah.
Gives me chills. I guess, yeah, I would imagine that I might do that if I had the capacity.
Right.
Just versus what, staying in a small cell the rest of my life, knowing that that's all there was.
Yeah.
It's just the same walls over and over. Yeah, I can relate. It really grabs your heart to think of that image. And well, she was only like half her lifespan.
Oh,
like,
she's had such a horrible life. She was captured in Japan in 2003, and then she was imported by the Vancouver Aquarium in 2005, pregnant, unbeknownst to the whale jailers in Japan and in Vancouver. So lo and behold, she's in Vancouver, and suddenly, you know, she gives birth to a stillborn baby. That was the first one. Then she had a second one. And I've talked to many people at the aquarium, and at first when she got there, they were really disturbed because they said that Hannah was really a wild animal. And I mean, they're all wild. It's just that some dolphins become incredibly passive, and they may just get stuck to a spot in the tank. That's a classic stereotypical behavior, which shows the stress that they're under. Hannah was going round, round, round. And again, it shows it's a stereotypical behavior because it's always the same way. They turn the same way. They go around, around. Something goes cuckoo in their heads. And when Rachel was talking about them not being releasable, I think that it's not because they wouldn't be able to eat live fish and enjoy the ocean again, of course, but it's because they really go crazy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's like putting someone in solitary confinement. I mean, something goes cuckoo in your head, and you know, their heads are bigger than ours, so we gotta wonder what's going on in there. And that really is the captivity issues main point is the suffering of these animals, the cruelty of keeping them in a tank, because people go to the aquarium and they see them perform for 20 minutes and then they're gone. The people, that is, the dolphins stay there. And when you watch them, for instance, the belugas, I always think of marshmallows floating in the water because they do nothing in between shows because they know there's nothing to do. So it's truly, for somebody who has empathy for animals, it's truly heartbreaking. For somebody who doesn't understand that animals feel just like we do, then it might be fun, unfortunately.
Yeah. Back to the dolphins, I guess after Hannah died, Noelle's in captivity, you instigated a petition?
Yes, we have a petition online, and the petition is for no new dolphins. Rachel was talking about banning the breeding. That's a bit harder to do, but certainly banning the importation of more dolphins and whales has been our campaign since 1992. And we've been successful, of course, with the orca whales. When the last orca, Bjosa, was shipped to SeaWorld in 2001, they closed the tank instead of bringing more orcas. That was due to public pressure. So we truly believe that the aquarium right now is looking for another Pacific white-sided dolphin because they are prized possessions of these whale jails since they're such acrobatic performers. And so we want the Vancouver Park Board, which is really the only government agency that we have that controls somewhat the aquarium, in the sense that the aquarium is sitting on subsidized parkland, which is regulated by the Park Board. So the Park Board can use the Vancouver Charter in order to ban the importation of any animal they want into a park. And we've been successful in 1996 in them enacting a bylaw that would do just that. Unfortunately, the aquarium's lawyers got in there and they managed to add a few clauses, and those amendments rendered it useless. So we're back to square one, but never give up.
Yeah, it's like two steps forward, one step back. That kind of thing seems, yeah, a lot of drama over the years with the aquarium and the rules there, and it seems like a rule will change and then it goes back and it's like, ah,
yes,
it must be very frustrating. You've been working on this for a very long time.
It is, but on the other hand, you know, I mean, I've been in the animal rights movement for so long, and you know, I remember when I turned vegetarian 35 years ago, nobody knew how to spell vegetarian. What is that? And you know, when I turned vegan probably a few years after that, people didn't know what it was. Now everybody knows, and you find vegetarian dishes in every restaurant, and people are aware, you know, of the fur seal hunt and all sorts of animal rights issues that truly, you know, we've come a long way, baby.
That's
how I keep the hope, because I see the progress. I mean, the fact that we have no orcas in captivity and there's only one orca left in the whole Canada, that's huge. I mean, think about it. Sealand in Victoria closed. They had orcas. The Vancouver Aquarium closed the orcas. The Montreal Biodome was going to bring belugas. We closed that before it happened. Granby Zoo in Quebec was going to bring dolphins. We closed that, et cetera, et cetera. So we are getting somewhere. It's just slow and it takes dedication. And there's more and more people that are interested and certainly social media has been unbelievably great for campaigning, as we all know. So we just got to keep going, guys. That's all.
Yep. Speaking of social media, I guess, well, one thing I heard about on social media or one Facebook page/site is Van Aqua Facts.
Dot org. Yes.
Yeah.
That's a great one. Yeah, there's a lot of facts in there that will blow your mind. You know, people don't realize that only 1 out of 10 baby whale and dolphins have survived at the aquarium. So that's pretty bad.
Oh, wow.
And and how they die and when they die and all that is just so telling of why these animals really, truly don't belong in captivity. And it's time to empty the tanks.
Yeah. And you had mentioned that the Hannah, it was a Pacific white-sided dolphin, was a prized possession. And while, you know, she brings in a lot of money, mm-hmm. I think maybe one of the reasons why it's hard to fight against the Vancouver Aquarium is because they play themselves as a nonprofit organization who's involved in lots of rescue and rehabilitation. And that leads us to talk about Chester.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us about Chester and what's going on with him?
Yeah, Chester is a false killer whale. And I've gotten so many calls and emails about, oh my God, they got another killer whale. No, they don't. Killer whales are orcas. And this is, Chester belongs to a species called a false killer whale. It's also a dolphin species. And people need to understand that there's about 90, and that's 90 species of whales, dolphins, and porpoises, which are, of course, cetaceans. And out of those 90 species, there's only a handful of species that are kept in captivity because they perform tricks, for one thing. If they don't perform tricks, what are you looking at? So that's why they make money. In this case, false killer whales do perform tricks, not as good as orcas or Pacific white-sided dolphins. And they're not as showy because they're all gray. And for some reason, it's been studied that black and white animals attract people very much. So this poor Chester, he was rescued. He was in off Tofino in the west coast of Vancouver Island about a year ago, and he was brought into the Vancouver Aquarium's Marine Mammal Rescue Center, where unfortunately and obviously he wasn't rehabilitated, and that is something that, I mean, we're quite shocked about, because a rescue agency is supposed to rescue an animal with the intent to release it. In order to release an animal, you need to rehabilitate, which is what you were talking about with Rachel in sea pens. And sea pens are basically set up for the animals that are being rehabilitated at the time, which is why there's no locations that are specific right now. So the point is that it's incredibly suspicious that the day after Hannah dies, leaving Helen in the tank, in the show tank, which of course nobody, the tourists who go to the Vancouver Aquarium don't want to see this dolphin on her own doing tricks and so on. So the day after Hannah dies, the Vancouver Aquarium announces that Chester is unreleasable and will end up in the same tank with Helen. Things that make you go because for one thing, the authority, if you will, that has deemed it unreleasable is the Federal Fisheries Department, Federal Fisheries, and they're not in charge. You see, Federal Fisheries is in charge of whales and dolphins if they are in the ocean. But once they're put on provincial land, they have absolutely no jurisdiction. And it is the BC Environment, Ministry of Environment, that would have their jurisdiction. However, they don't list marine mammals in the Wildlife Act, because of course there's no marine mammals on land. So technically, marine mammals in Canada fall through the cracks of legislation because there's nobody really regulating. But just like the Vancouver Aquarium hides behind that nonprofit status, which I can't tell you how many for-profit companies are run out of the aquarium. It's truly scary. They hide behind fisheries and oceans. And so what they've done is they've said that this animal is basically unreleasable because, and I have the quote here somewhere, because of extensive contact with humans. Well, I'm sorry, but a rescue agency does not allow that to happen to the animals that they are rehabilitating. Why is the Vancouver Aquarium allowed to do that? And the other conversation that we really need to have with the public, and we are looking into this, is the fact that in Canada, regulations are meant to protect these animals from ending up in a captive display, in a show tank or a cage. And so what they do is that if there is an agency that rescues a wild animal and decides that the animal will not be able to fend for itself in the wild, then they have to be euthanized, because otherwise they become a zoo or an aquarium. So there's something really fishy going on at the Vancouver Aquarium with this, and we're certainly looking into that. There's a lot of people interested in why this is going on, and I think that Chester has become part of the collection of the aquarium, and it was meant to be that way from the start, which is really, really, you know, saying a lot about the fact that the aquarium is not a good marine mammal rescue center.
Yeah, wow. It's interesting. And also, like, thinking of Helen, the surviving Pacific white-sided dolphin, with a member of another species in a really small tank. Like, I just can't, it doesn't really seem to make sense. So, yeah.
But they do that. They do that a lot. Yeah. They mix and match and they pray to God that they get along, et cetera, et cetera. It's just not right.
Yeah. I know that you have so much more to share with us, but unfortunately our show is coming to a close. We'd love to have you on again later in the year, and we'll all see you tomorrow at the Vancouver Aquarium.
At 11 a.m. tomorrow, Saturday, outside the aquarium. And, you know, like Rachel said, bring a smile. Let's talk to those tourists. They don't know any better, and it's our job to bring public awareness, because that's really what we do. It's a family event, and yes, we hold children's protests, and 23 years of protesting outside the aquarium, we've never had a problem. So let's keep it that way. Everybody on their best behavior, and see you tomorrow.
Awesome. And then after after the event at the Vancouver Aquarium, there's going to be a vegan potluck at English Bay. Just at the end of Butte Street.
On the beach, yes.
On the beach, yeah. So that'll be lots of fun. Hopefully, like, I'm expecting, I would expect like 50 or 60 people at least.
I think so. Let's hope so.
And what else is coming up, Jackie?
Yeah, so Resistance Ecology is back for the third year in a row, and it is happening next weekend. That's June 12th to 15th. I know Alyssa, you're coming, and Rafa, you're coming, because we're all going together. I'm really excited. This will be my first year going. So Resistance Ecology Conference has served as a beacon in the path to grassroots animal liberation. It's all about coalition building with other land defenders and organizers of various social justice struggles and fighting against the Euro-settler colonialism, white supremacy, patriarchy, capitalism, neoliberalism, and border imperialism that currently exists. So I'm excited to attend that conference.
And all the videos, most of the videos, will be posted online after, so not everyone can afford to go to Portland next weekend. I can barely afford it, but all the videos will be there. So just keep note of that and check out Resistance Ecology if you want to learn more.
For sure. And there's a great list of speakers attending this one. So yeah, check it out. And also in a couple weeks on June 20th, that's a Saturday at 8 p.m., the Wild Tofu Tour is taking place in Heartwood Cafe in Vancouver. So more than just a conference, each event will also aim to showcase local organizations that fight against a number of forms of oppressions and encourage those in attendance to get involved in their community on a local and global level. So Animal Voices will be there.
Along with the Queer Animal Collective. Yay. And some other groups, and they have veg-friendly musicians lined up. So it's just going to be a fun night, and it's promoting Tofu Magazine, which is a vegan magazine based out of, I can't remember.
Somewhere.
Somewhere, not Vancouver. Anyway, Ryan Patey from the magazine is going to join us on Animal Voices next week. That's Friday, June 12th. That's about all we have for you on the show today. Again, you're listening to Vancouver Co-op Radio, 100.5 FM CFRO, broadcasting live. We would like to thank you for listening today to our Empty the Tank show. We're really excited about the event, as we are every year. And World Oceans Day on Monday, June 8th. Mark that however you wish to. Tune in next week. We look forward to that show. Tim's going to be producing a show, one of our newer producers. You might not know, we rotate producer duties here, so each show has a bit of a different flavor. We all do a bit of different styles and talk about different kinds of topics that relate to each of us individually. So keep in touch with Animal Voices, animalvoices.org, and you can find our Facebook and Twitter there. We love to hear from you. Email us at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. Do stay tuned for one of our favorite shows on Co-op Radio. It's Radio Eco Shock with Alex Smith. An excellent show. Remember to be kind to animals, and see you next week.